Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. When we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome once again to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com on this October the 22nd on the West Coast. Now on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone, it is October the 23rd, 2008, in the year of our Lord. Welcome to the show, and where do we begin? There is just so much spin going around that my head is dizzy, and I haven't even been listening to it. Just talking to the people that are listening to the spin is enough to make your head dizzy. Lots we're going to talk about tonight. Rather than going into a news item like I usually do, I think the big news is our guest tonight. He has had his own internet, a radio talk show for a few years now. And he's currently on hiatus, we'll say. And I have been a guest on his show many, many times, The American Awakening. And he also has a website called theamericanawakening.org, which I welcome you to visit. And he is also responsible for getting me on the airwaves. And he's not just a patriot, not just a pilot, an excellent researcher, an excellent host in his own right, and my good friend, Michael Herzog. Michael, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Don Nikoloff, but I have to mention to you, don't leave out deck builder, okay, because that's what I'm doing lately. I'm on hiatus right now. I've decided to take some time off from broadcasting. Of course, I'm doing a few guest spots, your program and a couple others. But that being said, I just wanted to take some time off and reflect and go from mental into physical. And sometimes physical is good therapy, believe it or not, because it gives your mind a chance to focus on other things. So that's what I've been doing lately. But I appreciate the opportunity to come on your program and share some thoughts with you. It's always a pleasure to be on your program, Don.
Well, it's nice to have you back. Well, you mentioned deck builder. I should mention also that you are professionally an estate planner, and you're also licensed as a private investigator. Of course, if that's really true, then I shouldn't be talking about that. It's a private issue, right?
Well, there's a story behind that. You know, it's interesting. Back in the late 1990s and early 2000, I got in a divorce from my prior wife, and I'd moved to Phoenix, Arizona from Fort Wayne, Indiana, and I was looking for something to do. Of course, you know, when you're married for 20 years and you go through a divorce, your self-esteem is sort of kicked in the groin. So I was looking for things to do that would build my self-esteem. And one of the things that I did was I became a licensed private investigator. Unfortunately, I got the cart ahead of the horse, Don, and I went through all the training and I got the certificate and I became a certified private investigator before I went out to try to seek employment as a private investigator, and when I found out what they paid, I decided I didn't want to go there. So I used the knowledge and expertise I learned in investigation to do research, but it's come in handy at times. That being said, I never went out and, you know, spied on any people having extramarital affairs or anything like that. So
Well, did you make the kind of money that Tom Selleck made as Magnum P.I.? Or were you more in line with the Rockford Files version?
Well, actually, it's interesting about private investigation because what they do is they hire you on as an apprentice, and you have to be an apprentice depending upon what state you're in. In my case, it was in Arizona, and I believe you had to be an apprentice for 3 years, and the investigation firms would always pay you just rock-bottom pay. They wanted me to go out and sit in the car and watch, you know, a house for, well, it's just over minimum wage, $7 an hour. And I told the guy when he offered me that, I said, I'd pay you 10 just to let me stay home. You know, because It was, as I said, I got the cart ahead of the horse. I went through all the training before I realized what they actually pay people, and they do that because they have you on the hook for 3 years as an apprentice, and they can literally pay you whatever they want. So that was my short
list. So did you, or did that guy accept your offer?
No, I was just kidding about that. But
$10
well, actually, an hour? Actually, I did tell him that. I told him that in jest, tongue-in-cheek. I said, no, thanks. I'd rather pay you $10 an hour and stay home. And so the conversation was short-lived. He didn't like that very well. Since then, you know, when you have that credential, if you will, you know, you'll get a call every now and then from somebody wanting to do something, spy on this person or, you know, find out, you know, the dirt on somebody else. But I've never really used it. The only thing I've used it for really is in my research, you know, when I'm looking down a rabbit hole on one person or another. That's about it. Other than, I will tell you one thing that I've learned that stuck out in my mind over and above anything else, and that is, and it's very interesting, it's a bit of trivia for your audience just in case. If you're ever driving down the road, you can, and you're approaching a light, and your light is green, okay, and you're driving down the road, there's a way to tell if your light is going to turn red before you get there. And do you know how that is?
How is that?
You look at the walk signal on, you know, when it says wait or walk for the pedestrian walking across the street.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, watch the walk signal. When it starts flashing, you know it's getting ready to turn to a caution light. And when it goes right to red, then you know it's going to go to caution right away.
Mm-hmm.
That is the most brilliant thing out of everything I learned in private investigation. That stood out in my mind, believe it or not, more than anything else. And it's come in more handy than anything else I've ever learned. But that aside, okay, yes, that's one credential, believe it or not, but it's it comes in handy once in a while. So,
now, I didn't go to PI school, and I kind of knew that just from watching what those lights do. Of course, you have to be in a town big enough and at an intersection large enough to even have that feature. Anymore, I haven't noticed that so much, you know.
No, what you notice
just
now,
in the big city.
You notice those big square, they're not just little cameras. They used to have little cameras on the lights, you know, up above on the stoplights, you know, little camera where if you ran the red light, they'd take your picture. But now they've got these big square ones, rectangular ones. And they do in Phoenix anyway, you know. So it goes beyond just, you know, snapping your picture if you run a red light. They've got you coming and going, and I think they've got some centralized system now where they can watch every intersection, every major intersection in the city, and they know who's going where and when. Rather bizarre, but interesting. Are they going up in your town, Don?
Well, not in my town, but in some of the larger cities, they're all over the place. And they seem to go up in areas where there are the more expensive homes. I think that's because they figure people in those areas have more dispensable or disposable income that they can just throw away. And, you know, we know where all of these cameras are. That's the funny thing. You slow down for 3 seconds till you're out of range of the radar, and then you speed up again, you know.
Well, interesting, you know, speaking of the cameras they have, and I don't know, you know, up in where you're at, but in Arizona they have these vans that are on the side of the road. And, you know, they park them in these inconsequential places where you don't really see them until you get right up on them. And if you're speeding, they'll snap a picture of you as you're coming, and then they'll snap another picture as you go by. And I've been unfortunate enough. My first experience with that was back in 1999, and I had just bought a new Corvette. It wasn't new. It was 10 years. It was new to me. You know, it was like a 86, I think. And I went through a school zone, and I was speeding. I was speeding, and it caught. And I didn't even know what it was. I'd never seen one of these things before. I just moved to Phoenix, bought a Corvette, and I'm going through a school zone, and I'm speeding, evidently. And so it snapped my picture, and then when I went by, it snaps another picture of your license plate. And I didn't think too much of it because I didn't even know what was going on. About a week later, in my mailbox, I get this thing from the state, you know, that shows a picture of me in my Corvette, and then it shows a picture of my license plate, and it tells me to call this toll-free number. And so I call the number, and the first thing they say when they answer the phone is, "Were you the driver of the vehicle?" And, of course, not knowing any better, I said, well, yes, I was. Well, boom, as soon as you do that, you're guilty. All right, you're done. And then they give you an option of paying a fine, some ridiculous fine, $150 or something like that. Or you can go to traffic school and they'll knock off 45 of the 150. I paid the fine, but I learned my lesson there, you see, okay? Because they can't track you down unless you have a physical address. Because if you have a physical address, they'll try to serve you. And I found out through the grapevine of people, many, many, many people in the town that had this happen to them before, that the only thing that you do is you just, you know, I had a post office box that my mail came to, so you just throw it away. And you throw it away, they can't serve you anyway because it's a post office box. So, you know, I've had, well, I don't know, one or two of them since then in 10 years, and I've had my daughter's gotten a couple of them. They just throw them in the wastebasket, and nothing ever happens. So I shouldn't be saying that on the air. But go ahead.
Just for the next time that happens, when they ask you that question, were you the driver of the vehicle, the appropriate thing to respond with is, what vehicle?
What vehicle?
And then you, now you've challenged their thinking processes. And then they explain to you, well, the vehicle that got the ticket, what ticket? Anyway.
Well, now, I wasn't thinking that far ahead, but I'll log that for future reference here. At any rate, I do want to point out to the listening audience, if you're in a town and you get one of these, you know, flash tickets, and they're doing this now with the red lights, too. I mean, they got the cameras up there where they'll give you a ticket if you go through the red light. There doesn't even have to be a van there. But if you get one of these things that comes to your house, if you don't answer it, if it's a physical address and you don't answer it, they will serve you. With a, you know, a process server will come out and serve you. But if you have a post office box and it comes to your post office box, there's nothing they can do about it. Unfortunately, when I originally got a driver's license in Arizona, I used my post office box, and it's been on my driver's license ever since, so they've never been able to do anything to me other than that one first ticket I got, and that's where I learned my lesson. So,
yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't realize we were going to be talking about this. Totally off the ball.
Well, that's what Evident Footprints is all about, the unknown.
Well, I had one footprint, and after that, they went away, you see. But, you know, what's interesting, though, is I remember a few days after I received that ticket, it was after I'd already called the number and I'd already, you know, admitted guilt, I got this thing in the mail from some guy that was in Phoenix that was telling me how to beat these tickets, you know. Had this whole, this whole expose of everything you do to beat the ticket. And he charges like $35. So, you know, this has been going on for a long time. I guess it's a good way for them to raise revenue, which, as we all know, you know, all these towns now, these cities are corporations, and that's all they're out for is to raise revenue. Of course, they're telling you it's for your safety, but really it's for their pocketbook, you know.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, yes, what else is new?
Well, it's been a while since you and I spoke on the air about this this campaign, and it just seems to be getting more ridiculous and more ridiculous as we go along. It's like watching a D movie, isn't it? I don't know if it's just me. You have any comments about that?
Well,
just
let me
in general, what we're seeing.
Well, first of all, I've been building decks. Okay, so I haven't been paying too much attention. Every once in a while, I'll catch a little snippet. Now, I caught a snippet today. I walked in this afternoon, and I saw something on CNN about Sarah Palin spending $150,000 on a wardrobe. And the public is up in arms about that. And then, of course, everybody's coming out and saying, oh, you know, Sarah Palin is hurting John McCain's campaign, which I don't know how much worse you could hurt it. Just being John McCain is enough to hurt it. But that's beside the point. Anyway, you know, I believe, and I haven't really looked at the polls, maybe you can help me out here, but it would seem to me like Barack Obama is in the lead. Am I right or wrong? Come on now. Don, are you with me? Are we still broadcasting? Hello, Don.
Yes, I had a technical glitch there, so I apologize.
Oh.
My
engineer may
have fallen asleep on me.
All right. Well, so you know, from the drift that I get, at least from the propaganda that's being spewed forth through the mainstream media and the little clips that I get, I'm thinking Obama's probably in the lead, right?
Well, you know, it goes one day they're in, or he's in the lead. The next day it's a tie. McCain was totally incompetent at the last debate, but now Fox runs an expose on Obama, which is really just a regurgitation of the same nothingness that they're reporting all the time. Although they're dragging the William Ayers issue into this, like that's really important right now. The main issue for anybody out there is the issue of his citizenship, not if he's affiliated with Tony Resco, a convicted money launderer, or William Ayers, a guy that was part of the Weather Underground terrorists, if you want to call them that, and then they go into issues about abortion. And if you've read my expose, I mean, there's a lot of meat in what I've come out with that they won't touch with the 10-foot pole because it tells the truth about the guy.
Well, now what I know, I mean, and this gets good, and I'm going to share some things with you and your listening audience that I didn't share with you that I found out recently here. But talking about that, you know, this has been going on for quite some time. I mean, Filburg filed a lawsuit. You know, there's a major question about whether or where Barack Obama was born. Interestingly enough, Barack Obama is mysteriously taking a trip over to Hawaii to see his sick grandmother, supposedly. And there's a whole bunch of, innuendo and suspicion going on in Hawaii that his birth certificate is fraudulent. But Phil Berg, the attorney that filed the lawsuit against Barack Obama, he challenged his qualifications to serve as president. Now, he announced, that Obama and the Democratic National Convention admitted, by way of failure, to timely respond to the request for admissions, all of the numerous specific requests in the federal lawsuit. Now, Obama, according to Filburg, is not qualified to be president, and therefore Obama must immediately withdraw his candidacy for president, and the DNC shall substitute a qualified candidate. Now, this is in the case of Berg versus Obama. Because he had filed the request for admissions on September the 15th, and they failed to answer, they had 30 days to answer this, and they didn't answer. So, by default, Obama admitted that, number one, he was born in Kenya. He was not born in Hawaii. If he was actually born in Hawaii, he would have refuted this. Number two, that he's a Kenyan natural-born citizen, that his foreign birth was registered in the state of Hawaii. His father, Barack Hussein Obama Sr., admitted paternity of him. His mother gave... Now, these are admissions by default. Okay, his mother gave birth to him in Mombasa, Kenya. His mother's maiden name is Stanley Ann Dunham, a.k.a. Ann Dunham. The certificate of live birth posted on the website fightdesmears.com is a forgery. That he admits he was adopted by a foreign citizen, again, by default. It just goes on and on and on and on. And what I'm scratching my head about here is that, you know, Jerome Corsi went down the rabbit hole on this one. He actually traveled to Kenya to see if he could uncover the actual truth about this, and they arrested the guy. Okay, so there's some big heavyweight players here that are covering all this up. Now, would you agree so far?
Yes. Now, there's also Andy Martin, who filed a lawsuit. Andy Martin is a journalist and an author, and he's located in Chicago, although he's working out of New York right now, probably because of the book that he's written. And he is the one who has just filed this lawsuit in the state of Hawaii, which he's demanding the birth certificate. And actually, the lawsuit is filed against the governor and the secretary of the health department, the state
health
department.
Now, would this have any tie-in, Don, to Barack Obama mysteriously going over to see his sick grandmother in Hawaii, who, well, from what I hear, he hates? But I mean,
well,
you know,
I don't know. I'd have to ask Bill O'Reilly for the real scoop on that.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right.
Or Wolf Blitzer, or one of those guys. You know. Yeah, of course. I mean, what do you think? it's so obvious what is going on here, yet this is being kept out of the mainstream. Yeah,
but I'm going to pave something here. Now, I usually don't, I try to report the truth at all times. Now, every once in a while, very rarely, but sometimes I'll screw up, not very often. But I want to preface where I'm going to go next here, because this is going to be a surprise to you, as well as the listening audience, okay? Because I just picked up on this after Don and I spoke earlier today, but I picked up on this after we had spoken today, all right? Now, let me walk you down this path here and follow along with me, Don.
Sure.
It's interesting that Joe Biden, vice presidential candidate, had come out with a guarantee that an international crisis will unfold shortly after President Obama takes office. Now, by him doing that, this conjures up several different possibilities, but it seems the likely outcome will revolve around an announcement that Iran has developed a nuclear bomb, prompting a potential military attack. Now, I'm taking this from Paul Joseph Watson, a report out today from PrisonPlanet.com. I'm going to take a couple of excerpts out of this.
Okay.
Biden goes on to say, it will not be 6 months before the world tests Barack Obama like they did John Kennedy, Biden told an audience in Seattle this past weekend. Now, hold on to that for a minute, okay? Because next up, we've got none other than, what's his name? Colin Powell. Colin Powell comes out on, Meet the Press.
Meet the Press.
Meet the Press. Colin Powell has made a bizarre comment that echoed the recent declaration by the Democratic VP, Joe Biden, that there will be an international crisis early into Barack Obama's presidency that will test the new president by forcing him to make unpopular decisions. Now, it says, speaking on Meet the Press 2 days ago, Powell officially endorsed Obama and also made the following statement, and I quote, Joe, this is from Colin Powell, the problems will always be there, and there's going to be a crisis which will come along on the 21st or 22nd of January that we don't even know about right now. Now, first question out of my mouth is, how can you make a statement like that, you don't even know about it right now, but you know it's going to happen January 21st or 22nd? Tell me about that. How can you do that, Don?
Well, Lisa Simpson, I was speaking with Ken Adachi early today, and I reminded him that in one of the episodes of The Simpsons, and I don't watch the show, I actually saw this still shot of one of the episodes. She had gone to New York, and she was informed she had to buy a bus ticket, and the ticket was $9. And they put this bus ticket with the price $9, big nine, white letters and a red background, up in the skyline of New York City. And to the right of the nine were the World Trade Centers. When you look at that shot of the nine with the Twin Towers next to it, it spelled out 9/11. This is in an episode of the Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to talk about putting subliminal messages out before the event. It was done in a cartoon on the Fox Network.
Okay, so let me go where I haven't gone before, and again, I'm not one to throw rumor out here, all right, but I want to take in consideration first that Biden has said that he's guaranteeing that there's going to be a crisis, which means that obviously they have inside information that there's going to be a crisis because they're going to fix the crisis. You know, they're going to create the crisis. But secondly, mm-hmm. we've got Colin Powell coming out on Meet the Press saying it's going to happen the 22nd or 23rd of January. Now, let me just throw this into the mix. And again, I want to preface this by saying I'm not coming on the air tonight and saying that this is true, this is going to happen. All I'm going to do is I'm going to share with you the results of a telephone call that I got today from my son, who informed me that he and his wife went out with some couples last night. They had some adult beverages. And he had the occasion to sit down and talk to a gentleman in Air Force Intelligence. And, of course, the drinks were served, and the drinks kept coming. And my son is very, very awake. He is very knowledgeable on chemtrails and weather modification and you name it, and he's right there with you. He's a young guy, 21 years old, but obviously being my son, he knows what's going on. And he's listen to, you know, most of my radio broadcasts. So he's very up to speed on what's happening. So he's sitting here with this Air Force intelligence guy, who, by the way, has a top secret clearance in the Air Force, and he's drinking with this guy. And the guy is getting proceedingly more loose, if you know what I mean. So my son is very tactful. My son is a brilliant salesman, and to be a salesman, you have to be a bit of a psychologist. So my son is, you know, tactfully and diplomatically asking him questions, planting seeds, and trying to get his responses on certain issues, such as chemtrails, what he knows, and weather modifications, and that sort of thing. But as the night progressed, they got on the subject of the elections, and this guy, by that time, it was 3 or 4 hours into the conversation. This guy's pretty tipsy, okay, according to my son. And he says that, and I will quote what my son said that this guy had mentioned to him. He says that they are already planning Barack Obama's assassination. Now, that ties right in with what Pastor Matthew Stephen predicted when he came on my program last month and said there's going to be 2 American political assassinations in the next 6 months. You know who Pastor Matthew Stephen is, correct?
Yeah, he was on my show recently saying the same thing, with Stephen Benning as well.
So let's walk this through. Let's just speculate. And I'm not saying that this is going to happen. I'm saying this was what was told to my son last night by an Air Force intelligence guy with a top-level secret clearance. And let's look at this for a moment. Colin Powell predicts Armageddon January 22nd or 23rd. All right, the inauguration day is the 20th. So that would be the next day or the day after the inauguration day. So would it be beyond the elite, the Illuminati, the New World Order, call them what you will, the Bilderberg Group, to pull off another assassination? It would be perfect because Barack Obama is a black man. They could blame it. They could say it was racially motivated. Joe Biden, the vice president, who is also an admitted Zionist, he's not Jewish, but he's an admitted Zionist, would step into the ranks and would take over. Now, how unlikely would that be? Given the set of circumstances of what's going on right now, that is, to me, that's a distinct possibility that could be in the cards as to what might happen. Because Colin Powell is predicting an event. Joe Biden has already predicted a crisis. Didn't say what it was. People are just speculating on it. But these guys that are in the elite, these high-level officials that are they're Masonic, they're Zionist, whatever they are, okay, they seem to have insider knowledge of what's going to happen. And I'm just tossing it out here, Don, saying I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying that is a high possibility, not a probability, but it's a good possibility that could very well be in the cards. Would you want to expound on that?
Yeah. First it was Osama bin Laden. Now it's Obama Joe Biden.
Okay.
What should I say?
Well,
that's all that comes to mind. I mean, it's,
well,
it's
all right. Let me pull up another one. For the sake of your listening audience, a lot of them don't know who Larry Sinclair is, probably, unless they've heard me on your show before. Sinclair is a gay guy that made the allegations that Barack Obama is actually a bisexual when he had an illicit affair with Larry Sinclair in 1999. But I'm looking at a copy of right now. And it's online, by the way, the National Enquirer. Now, people say tongue-in-cheek, oh, the National Enquirer, I don't believe anything out of this. But let me read just a couple of excerpts here. Obama sex pervert scandal. The National Enquirer exclusively reports a sex pervert was Senator Barack Obama's longtime mentor and father figure. For 7 years, the presidential candidate, Barack Obama, had a father-son relationship with a guy by the name of Frank Marshall Davis, who was confessed to having sex with children. Sadomasochism, bondage, and practicing a wide array of deviant sexual activities. Now, taking into consideration what Larry Sinclair had to say about Barack Obama and his illicit affair and the crack cocaine that went on, I cannot disbelieve this. I'm not saying I fully believe it, but it goes on to say in his 1995 memoir, Dreams from My Father, the book, the memoir, Dreams from My Father, Obama identifies his childhood mentor only as Frank, but Obama insiders later confirmed that he was referring to this Davis, a journalist and poet who was a pal of Obama's maternal grandfather, Stanley Dunham. Frank Marshall Davis admitted in his private papers that he had secretly authored a hardcore pornographic autobiography called Sex Rebel, Black, published in 1968. And the author of the book, a copy of which had been obtained by the National Enquirer, is listed as Bob Green. Now, Davis later confessed to its authorship after a reader noticed similarities in the style and phraseology between that book and Davis' poetry. So, in essence, this guy, this Frank Marshall Davis, was a father figure to Barack Obama for 7 years. He was sadomasochism, admitted sadomasochism, bondage, and practicing a wide array of deviant sexual activities. In his formative years, that could possibly be why, if it's true, Barack Obama is now a bisexual, which would lend even more credence to Larry Sinclair's story of the illicit affair involving crack cocaine with Barack Obama on two different occasions. Am I way out in left field here, or...
No. Now, Sean Hannity, in a special he did on Hannity's America this past weekend, mentioned that. He spent 10 or 15 minutes of this hour-long broadcast talking about that, but he didn't mention the homosexuality. You see, that's the issue that they leave out. They leave out the drug issue, and there are even more sinister things in his background, which I uncovered going down the rabbit hole with the names. As if you've read my article, you're aware of what I'm alluding to. We can talk about that, too, because there are three online references to a baby that lived a total of 56 days, and it has the last name Obama, born and died in Maryland. Are you familiar with my article or that particular piece of information?
When was it written? Remember, I've been building decks lately, so...
okay. All right. Okay, well, it's coming out in this month's edition of the Idaho Observer. However,
well, then, I'm not familiar with it. You didn't
It's been online for a month, Michael.
I haven't been online.
Right, okay.
So there you go.
All right.
I've been building decks. Again, one more time, I'm a deck builder, at least for my hiatus. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I have to say that you are the first deck builder that's been on my show, so I'm honored.
Well, I take that as a compliment. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I will say this. As soon as the deck is finished, I'm retiring from that profession. But other than that, go ahead.
Okay. Let me just say this. In researching aliases, and I came up with a number of aliases for everyone in the Dunham family and the Obama family, particularly Barack. And one of the names is using the last name Bama, B-A-M-A. Now, I discovered that quite by accident, and still it ties back to him. There is a David Obama, who is supposedly a stepbrother born in Kenya, of the white woman that Obama Sr. married during or after his Harvard days. He took this woman, Ruth, back to Kenya and married her and fathered, I think it's three sons, if my memory serves me correctly. Two, definitely. One was David, who supposedly died in a motorcycle accident. Now, there are conflicting statements in Obama's book that he never met David, that David died in 1987 before Barack went to Kenya in 1987. However, Barack's, and it's going to sound like I'm meandering off the topic, but this directly applies to what I'm about to describe. Kezia, one of the many wives of Barack Sr., ended up moving to London, and she described meeting Barack in Kenya in 1985. Now, I had uncovered quite a bit of information, but I hadn't tied up all the loose ends. I would still be doing the research on it, short of going to Kenya. Phil Berg brought this out, that Obama had been there in 1981.
Well, that would make him, I mean, 1985, he'd have been about, what, 22 years old. 1981, he'd have been about 18. right, go ahead. I'm writing this down.
Okay.
I'm taking notes here. Go ahead.
So David Obama is killed in 1987, and Barack claims that he never met him. Yet I published a photo of the family where there are four individuals in a family photo who are unidentified. And I raised the issue. Is it possible that one of these people is David Obama, number one? And
well,
if so...
Let me interject something. Is one of the family members Odinga?
Well, that's a good question. Because you have four people unidentified. Some are women, and some are men. And Barack's standing there, and there's obviously a gross difference in complexion, in my estimation, and this is not a racist comment. This is specifically what happens when a white woman and a black man from Kenya get married. The black genes are dominant. And would remain so through several racial mixes, interracial marriages, if you want to use that term. And it's over a period of time. Now, there are probably flukes in reproduction, and I suppose, you know, a black person marrying another black person might even produce an albino. So that's an example. However, it's very, very noticeable that there is an extreme difference, as if there is a different racial mix than what they're proclaiming. They're trying to give him this label African American. Now, there is documentation, according to Phil Berg, in Kenya, but there's also documentation in Indonesia, and all of the research I did led me to believe that he's actually Indonesian. Even the name Obama is from two Indonesian words put together. O, which is a vocative, we use it in many languages, and Bama, which means when, in Maluku, which is from Papua New Guinea. He looks very much like those people from New Guinea who were under Dutch rule and who are actually many of the immigrants into Holland. And I've been to Holland, and I've seen Moluccans. And they look like Barack Obama. That skin tone, the color of his lips, is not of an African-American. It's of the South Pacific region.
Mm-hmm.
And some Arab races. Now, so there is definitely a dispute as to this guy being African or possibly Indonesian, and in fact, I lean more toward Indonesian just because of all the things. Now, let's get into this story. Keep in mind, I'm saying there's a strong possibility that he was from Papua New Guinea, and that was the talk. It's in my article also. That is the talk there by people who were doing research in Jakarta, Indonesia. In a database here in the United States, there is the name David Adjoa Obama. Now, David Obama died, so who is this guy, David Adjoa Obama? Is this an alias for Barack Obama? Searching the alias, I came up with a name, Rene Abena Obama. Abena spelled A-B-E-N-A. Rene with a double E on the end, Abena Obama, and two references to a middle initial, which actually appears before the name Obena. Rene L. Abena Obama. Now, L happens to be the middle initial for Madeline Lee Payne, later Madeline Lee Dunham, the grandmother. So, and she's big in banking, remember that. Okay, she was the vice president of two banks, one up in Seattle and the Bank of Hawaii in Honolulu. Now, I'm finding under the name Bama real estate. And under Obama, I'm finding all kinds of under the table real estate transactions in multiple states, many in Maryland. Silver Spring, Hyattsville are two areas where there are multiple houses. And again, the partner, a woman by the name of Fisher, Maxine Fisher, when I went down the rabbit hole on Maxine Fisher. I came up with the name Maxine Frenas. And when I put Frenas into a Google search, it said, do you mean Fisher? There's no similarity between the words, and yet putting that name in the Google search engine pulled up that other name. So I knew I had another alias there. And I found properties in Florida. I found associations with big businesses in the food industry. And a really interesting company name, Sailor Men, Inc. Sailor Men, Inc. Very strange name for a company. And they're managing food companies across the country. And they're into lots of other things, too. Now, following this name, David Obama, I found the baby's name, and I'm looking at this, and all of a sudden I see, well, the baby has a Social Security number. And I run the Social Security number, and it comes up in the Social Security Death Index. This baby was born Halloween, or All Hallows Eve, October 31st, 2004, and dies December 25th, 2004. I look at this and I say, that's a bit strange. If I didn't know what I knew about metaphysics and what I know these people do for satanic rituals, I would just say, well, it looks like this baby was sick and died. However, I looked at it a bit closer and counted the days. The number of days this baby lived was 56. Numerologically, 56 is an 11. The baby died on December 25th, 2004. Coincidentally, Obama's so-called grandfather on the Dunham side of, or no, I should say great-grandfather on the Dunham side of the family, was born December 25th, same day, 1894, exactly 110 years prior. Again, the 110 works out to be numerologically the number 11. The next day, there was a worldwide event that caused panic all over the world. It was a tsunami on December 26, 2004. The death toll was 146,000 people. Add the numbers 1, 4, and 6, and you get another 11. This is kind of interesting. And that tsunami was in Indonesia. It wasn't in Kenya. Indonesia. I see that as a satanic event, a satanic ritual, or a satanic sacrifice. Now, interestingly, there's a piece of property in Tamarack, Florida. It's a condominium, condominium number 111, and it's in the name of Renee Abena Obama, Life Estate, it says, in parentheses next to it. Then it has a name, Linda B. Hartook and Brian Bama. Brian stands for Barack. It's just the obfuscation technique that they use in laundering these properties. Same thing they're doing down in Maricopa County, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They're playing the name game, changing the first couple of letters in a name, or changing the middle initial. Found it very, very interesting. So Obama had a baby, somebody in the Obama family who was living in Maryland. Who would you think in 2004 was living in Maryland out of the Obama camp? And this...
let's see. Obama was in Chicago, right? I mean, that's where his campaign headquarters is. I mean, you're taking me down a pathway here, and I have to, you know, apologize to the listening audience, because you're much more astute and adept at going down the rabbit hole on these kind of genealogical issues. That's not my expertise.
Was he in Chicago, or was he preparing for the Senate? Was he in the Senate?
Well, I guess he'd be in the Senate, wouldn't he?
Yeah. Kind of interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, okay, well, go ahead. I'm listening. Go ahead, continue.
That's a heck of a lot more sinister than his affair with Larry Sinclair. That's the point I'm making.
Well, but, I mean, you know, this guy's laundry bag, you know, what's that song by Don Henley, Dirty Laundry? You talk about the real estate thing. I mean, there's so much bad news about this guy, Don. You know, that brings up the name Tony Resco back in Chicago with these, you know, real estate development deals and so forth. I mean, this guy's bad news. This guy's, you know, runs with some pretty shady characters. So it brings me back to square one, which is, you know, this guy, if we recall, surfaced really literally out of nowhere a couple of years ago. And, you know, we've got all of this inquiries and scuttlebutt and, you know, curiosities going on about his, not only his birthplace, his birth certificate, but also how come he won't come forth with his dossier or his, you know, the information about Harvard University and these places he supposedly went to school. This is all a deep, dark secret. And so it's being, you know, this whole thing has been planned out over a period of time, probably 15, 20 years, or maybe longer.
Or you know, maybe from the beginning.
Well, yeah, and so it takes me right back to square one. It's like, you know, when my son called me on the phone this afternoon, he says, "Dad, you know, you're never going to believe who I talked to. I was talking to an Air Force intelligence guy. I got him half drunk. He's spewing forth that they're already making plans to assassinate this guy." And you know, at the onset, the first thing I'd think of is, "Oh, come on, that's crap." But in light of what's going on here, plus the, you know, the racial overtones of this upcoming election and the people, you know, tossing this stuff out on mainstream media about, you know, they're going to get into the voting booth and they're actually going to change their mind because Barack Obama is black, you know, that could happen, blah, blah, blah. And it would not shock me in the least if these guys like Colin Powell that says, "Oh, there's going to be a crisis January 22nd or 23rd. Well, the only crisis that I could think of that would come that quickly as soon as Inauguration Day is, you know, he gets up to make a speech and somebody blows his head off, you know. But that would be, you know, pre-planned. But it would fit perfectly to tell the dumbed-down, mind-numbed Americans, you know, Joe Sixpack, that it was a racially motivated killing. You know, then Biden could conveniently step in, as the Zionist he is, and take over the reins. And we cannot forget where Biden came from. We cannot forget how he got to be the vice presidential candidate to begin with. Remember, it was his son, Beau, that filed the charges against Larry Sinclair, had him arrested, and then mysteriously, that was June 18th at Larry Sinclair's press conference, and then mysteriously, about a month or two later, was it, they dropped all the charges. You see, I never used to think this way, Don. I never used to be this bizarre in my thinking, but I realized in being an investigator, and this is one of the things I learned through reading all that material and taking those courses, is that you've got to learn to think like your adversary. And although it's scary, to me, there could be some semblance of truth to it. Do you agree or disagree? I mean, come on, bring your metaphysics into play here.
Well, it is very strange. That's the one thing that I marvel at in the model of research that I use. You know, when I talk with Don Harkins and Ingrid Castle about this stuff, and Don's always telling me, you know, when you bring metaphysics into this, you're really establishing a model of research that's very different from what we're taught in school. You know, they teach people how to do research, and I'm looking at history, and I'm seeing lots of stuff coming out about history that's not true. So, what qualifications did these historians have when they wrote these books? Well, when you learn that the intelligence agencies told these people what to write, then it becomes very clear. Well, this is being orchestrated by the intelligence agencies. So who are the intelligence agencies? And you begin looking at that. See, this is something they never counted on. They never counted on us waking up and discerning that there was something else pulling the strings other than what they taught us was pulling the strings. This myth that anybody can become president of the United States is quite ironic when they can have two candidates right now. And I feel the same way about McCain as I do Obama. He is no more an American citizen than Obama is. The difference is the boat that they came over on, or maybe Obama flew. But the McCain clan got here on a boat. And I described that in my writing, which I know you read the first.
I've read that one. Yes, I'll give you
the first
I'll
part.
Give you credit for that one.
Mm-hmm. Now,
so, all right. So, but here's the difference here between most researchers, most journalists, and you, is that I know your talent. I mean, and I'm sure your listening audience does. You know, you're a spiritual discerner, and you have the ability, you have the talent to be able to, you know, see things about people that other people can't see. And, you know, you've allowed me to use your talent, of which you know I use very sparingly. I don't, you know, say, Don, tell me about this guy, tell me about that guy. I don't do that. I only do it when it's, excuse me, in my mind, very necessary. But what's interesting is that there are people on this planet, few in number, you're one of them, but there are people on this planet that really do have that ability. And the government knows that there are people on the planet that have this ability, and they actually recruit those people. You know, people that are psychic, people that can help solve murders and so forth, that kind of thing. And so, you know, what's interesting, now I've asked you on maybe half a dozen occasions to use your talent in helping me out with, you know, my discernment or lack thereof, or with a specific event or an individual or whatever. And I will say that every time that I have asked you for those services, you've used them, you've given them to me, and they have been right dead on every time. I have also, there's another person I know that has the same abilities, and actually the federal government did recruit her to do the same thing. And there's one specific individual that I asked both you and her. And what's interesting is both of you, and you two don't know each other, but you both gave me the exact same itinerary, the exact same description of that individual. So, you know, I know that ability exists, and I know that you have that ability, and you use that in your research, and that's what puts you, you know, two or three steps beyond the average, even the good researchers, because you have the ability to look within the spirit, and a lot of people don't. So I'll give you that credit. Oh, how's that? So go ahead and continue.
Well, you know, that's a mountain to climb when you see that, and then you have to come forth with evidence to show others, because people require seeing the proof. It's not enough for them to, or they have to experience something, you know, that shows them that it's correct. In your case, we're talking about issues that are surrounding events that are occurring in your life. And so I come to you with the information to bring clarity to the situation.
Well, not always, though. There was one specific event that happened last year, and I'll share this with your listening audience. One specific event that happened last year, and there was a big talk show host out there that was literally fear-mongering and telling people that, you know, these specific individuals' house was on fire and they're getting killed and just a whole myriad of different circumstances. And I picked up the telephone and called you, and I said, Don, will you tell me whether this is true or not? And you said, no, it's not true. These two people are fine. And I got on the airwaves because I trusted in your discernment, and told people everything was fine, there's nothing going on, nobody's in danger. And that specific talk show host actually called into my show that day to try to save face, because you were right and he was wrong.
He did that twice, actually, because there were two occasions when I did that.
Yes, there were. And so that wasn't just my personal issues. That was something that affected other people that I needed at that particular point in time to know exactly what was going on, and I called on you to do it, and you came through with flying colors like you always do. So I appreciate that, and I thank you for it. So go ahead and continue with your thought now that I've got you 6 light years away from what you were talking about.
Somehow I get the feeling you're the host and I'm the guest here.
I can't help it. It just
always happens.
It's bred within me, and I just, you know, I just take off, and so you have to just kind of slap me up the side of the head and say, no, wait a minute, let me ask the questions here.
No, that's all right. Very, very few of my guests actually do that, so I don't mind. It's fun. And it keeps it real, too. What's good, Michael? So, in that particular scenario, if you remember, the first time the house was burning down, and we got the wife on the show 15 minutes later after I had told you that, remember? And she said, we're fine, we just had lunch. That was the first time.
This prolific talk show host, this famous talk show host, was talking about their house burning down, the feds were raiding it, and the house was on fire, and their, you know, bullets are flying and all this stuff, and he was eating a lot of crow later on that day, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, yeah, the first time was the fire, and the second time, which was a couple of weeks later, it was the bullets. And again, right away I told you that I didn't see that happening, and again, they were fine. So it's just using the gift in the proper way.
Yeah. Well, and this goes into, before we get back on to what we're talking about, this goes into what we were speaking about before last time. We touched on this a little bit. Elevated consciousness, and there are different levels of elevated consciousness, and you know how far it can expand is anybody's guess. From being the average dumbed down, mind numbed, hypnotized, you know, propagandized, mesmerized American, is I would say on a scale of 1 to 10, that's probably the lowest level of consciousness, because you're a victim and being subjected to what other people want you to think. And when you break out of that box is when you go to step two and you start critically thinking and seeing things for what they are and being able to ultimately spiritually discern. And so, you know, then getting on the radio, which I did a couple of years ago, you start to expand your consciousness even further. And there's an element of discernment that comes with that. And you know as well as I do, I have that gift as well, not to the tune that you do, but I'm a lot more in tune spiritually with my surroundings. And I can call things a lot better for what they are, and I have suspicions about people, places, and things that I never used to have. It hasn't been finely tuned and honed to the degree of people such as yourself and others that I know, but it's a growing experience that one develops, and we all have that ability to do it. As a matter of fact, I remember you telling me early on, almost 2 years ago now,
yeah,
that I would eventually have that same ability, and I'm gaining it. Although I still step in the mire once in a while, I'm getting better at it. So go ahead, continue with your thought, if you can remember it. Hello, are you with me, Don? Did we lose Don? Okay, he's got a technical glitch again, folks. I'm sorry about that, but we'll have him back up in a moment. Meanwhile, talking about consciousness. Are you with me, Don? I'm going to give you three, okay? 1, 2, 3. Don, are you still with me? Am I still with you? Seth, am I still broadcasting? Okay. Well, let's see. Maybe it's the top of the hour break. Maybe there isn't a break. I'm not sure. Last time I was on the show, there was no break. Anyway, until we can reconnect with Don, of which I'm not sure we're disconnected. Maybe I'm disconnected. But I'm going to assume for the sake of discussion for the moment, folks, that I'm not disconnected. And I'm going to stay on the subject of elevated consciousness because, to me, until we get Don back on the program, I'll share some things with you. It's very important that if we're still in that condition of listening to, you know, the pundits on CNN or ESPN or Bill O'Reilly's or the Sean Hannity's, if you can just step back for a moment, take a deep breath, and realize that these people are not telling you what the news is. They're telling you what to think the news is. They're placing in your mind what they want you to think the news should be, which is a very big difference from stepping outside of the box and critically thinking and evaluating all the facets of the news for what it is. And you can't do that by just listening to Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or any of these people. You have to do that by doing your own research, connecting the dots, or discerning the dots that are true and the dots that are false. That being said, that is a major step toward elevating your consciousness to a level, and I don't mean to sound condescending when I say this, because this has been a journey for me as well, but elevating your consciousness to a point where at least you're able to discern better who's telling the truth and who's lying. And what's interesting is, you know, the old saying, actions speak louder than words. Don't listen to what they say. Watch their actions when they say it. Listen to their voice inflections. Watch their movements, their face expressions, some of the signs that they make, because there's a language within a language that goes along with these elite. And they communicate with each other, and they communicate with us and each other at the same time through a method called doublespeak. They may be saying one thing to you, and you may think they're saying one thing, but they're actually saying something totally different to their own colleagues in cohorts. With that being said, Don, are you back with me?
Yes, I am. Well, you know what? This is interesting, Michael. I'm on five nights a week, 2 hours a night, and the only time this happens is when I'm on with Jim Murray and we're revealing secrets about Nikola Tesla, or talking about reptilians, or in this case, I think they shut Skype down completely.
Well, I was going to say your broadcasting quality took a step down, so I'm assuming you're speaking from a telephone now.
Yeah, I'm on a phone.
That's okay. You don't have to apologize. You don't have to worry about a thing. Seth will confirm. I carried the show for you until we got you back. So there's.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You knew something was up, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
When I didn't answer your next question.
Well, I'm just saddened that you weren't able to hear my soliloquy that I was putting forth while you were gone.
What did I miss?
I was just talking to the audience about consciousness and stepping outside the box, and instead of listening to what Sean Hannity and Alan Combs and Rush Limbaugh and all these people are telling you, they're not reporting the news to you. They're telling you what they want you to think the news is. They're telling you what to think. And so as soon as you make that step outside of the box and start critically thinking about it and examining and connecting the dots yourself, you're going to find out you're much more able to discern truth from fiction. That's what I was speaking about.
Yes. Well, we were at the top of the hour, and it was time for commercials, and wouldn't you know, Skype just totally went down. So,
let's do a commercial.
Let's do a commercial. Yeah, right.
Huh?
No, we can't right now, so...
That's okay. I mean, I would do one for you if you'd like.
I'm sure you would.
Ask your doctor if Paxil is right for you. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Are you playing with half a deck? Well, let Michael Herzog give you a full deck.
Really? Let me shuffle the other half for you. All right, well, anyway.
Well, I'm making a pun out of the fact that you're now a professional deck builder.
I see. Well, now remember, that's a short-lived venue, okay? As soon as I finish this deck, it's over with. I'm not doing it anymore because I have to. I'll share one thing with you. You know what I realized about building decks or digging ditches or whatever it is that I've been doing over the last couple of weeks? You know, at 59 years old, which I will be in December, I realized that building decks and digging ditches isn't for 59-year-old men. It's for 23-year-old men. 59-year-old men have serious problems when they get through and they go home. Their bones creak, their muscles hurt, they can't move, they can barely walk, their arthritis that they didn't know they have all of a sudden pops up. They have to start taking all kinds of medicinal, the pills and so forth to offset that, painkillers. And this is why I say, I'm doing this one time, I'm helping a friend, but then it's over, I'm done with that career and I'm going on to something else, probably back into broadcasting. As soon as I get an offer that is in a time slot of which I can deal with. That being said, let's get away from the deck building because it'll remind me that I'm very sore and very tired. But I've got my second win with you, Don. So go ahead. You've got the floor.
Well, going back to the metaphysical aspect. Now, I do talk about metaphysics from time to time, although recently there has been this prompting of spirit to go into the realm of discerning what's actually going on, and that becomes a very mental or analytical process. And at the same time, my intention is not to spread fear. There's enough of that going on, as you well know, but it's to address the issues. There are so many people in denial. If you're one who is in denial, you're not even going to be listening to the show, number one. If you're searching for the truth it comes in many shapes and sizes, different colors, different scents, it's going to depend on each individual as to how much of the truth they can handle. And looking at as many things as I look at, and you're doing the same thing. You see how these things are really all tied together. And when you take into consideration how things are presented to us, there's a lot of preparation that goes into the boop tube, and in general, radio programming is very similar to the TV in that it creates a lot of imagery and it builds false, let's say, representations of people. Oh, now we're getting Skype back, so we might be able to clarify this a little bit more here. I'm going to try to get back on again, and so I'm not going to hang up though. I'm going to see if the engineer will pick up here.
Well, that's okay. You go ahead. Anytime you want me to take over, I'll be happy to do that.
Yeah. Okay.
Speaking of, you know, I was watching a little snippet of CNN yesterday, and you know, my friend walked in. I'm staying with a friend right now. And my friend walked in the house, and I was standing in front of the TV with the changer, and I was turning the volume up. He says, "What are you doing?" And I was watching CNN, and there was two of the hottest chicks. Stephanie Cutter was one, and I believe she's in the Obama campaign, I think. And then there was another lady on the McCain side. Both of these girls had to be Sarah Palin quality beauty queens, right? And I wasn't paying much attention to what they were saying because I know both of them are full of it, right? But I'm watching these two girls and I'm watching them because they're hot, right? And I'm realizing that the Mind Numb Joe Six Pack isn't paying much attention either to what's really going on. He's going to pick which chick is the hottest chick, and he's going to vote for whichever one they're representing. And so this is psychological hypnotism that they're playing on the American public.
Yeah. Michael, hang on a second. Seth, if you're listening, answer Skype, please. We'll see if he's paying attention. He may not even be in the control room. Seth, pick up Skype. Oh, my goodness. Well,
He's probably out having a cup of coffee. All right.
I'm going to try Skype now.
Oh,
okay, can you hear me?
You're sounding better. You're sounding better than me, so I know you're back. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, very good. It's much easier now. Now I can I can actually go into a commercial break in a moment here.
So you're saying they're
paying attention to the girls is what you're saying.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was imagining just Joe Sixpack sitting there, you know, watching these two girls, and he probably is not paying a lot of attention to what they're talking about because most people can't understand it anyway, by design. But he's picking out which one's the best chick, you know, for him, his type, and he's probably going to vote for whichever one she's representing. But this is all part of the psychological ploy that they use. And it's very, very clever, you have to admit, you know, that this is the way that they manipulate the masses. And I look back, you know, if you remember back, Don, you know, let's go back to the primaries, back when we had, you know, 10 candidates on either side, and we saw, you know, for example, the Republicans. You have 10 of them all up there on a stage, and you got, what's his name, Mitt Romney, and you got Fred Thompson, you got John McCain, you got Rudy Giuliani, and, you know, Ron Paul, and, you know, whoever the rest of them were. And
Mike Huckabee.
Huckabee, and you look at, do you remember in your mind which one stuck out for whatever the reason? For example, Mitt Romney. Now, I don't really care for Mitt Romney, but, you know, he was eloquent. He was well-dressed, well-spoken. He looked like he could be a president. You know, I don't know what his voting record is or anything like that, but he looked the part. I mean, you know, just light years ahead of John McCain. And then we had Fred Thompson, who was really a boob. You know, you got Huckabee, who's, you know he's, you know, kind of, he's addressing the religious right, if you will. But how in the world, and Ron Paul's the only one that got up, you know, the only guy that was qualified to be president on either side of the aisle was Ron Paul. We know that, but they didn't let him speak at all. How in the world did this puppet, this guy that, when he bangs on the podium, actually looks like somebody's pulling his strings? How did this guy, John McCain, ever get to the forefront? Well, the only way you would know how that would happen is if you're awake and you realize how the whole system works. Because we have to go back to being the average mind-numbed American. How could they possibly look at these 10 candidates on the Republican side and justify John McCain being the the man out of those 10 men? Can you,
you read my article on the Three Stooges go to Washington and you find that answer?
How far back do you, do we as awakened Americans have to regress to be at that point to actually thinking that, you know, John McCain's the most qualified man for the job? Right?
Oh, you don't have to go back very far at all. In fact, you just look at him now. You know, first of all, he's disqualified in terms of his nationality. And he's
But Don, let's remember, okay? He's disqualified due to his nationality, but we have to remember that the only people that know that are the people that are smart enough to listen to programs like yours on Alternative Talk, other programs that are out there that are telling the truth about what's going on, because the large majority of people are listening to this garbage that's being spewed forth out of this boob tube. And this is where, I have to keep reminding myself, you know, to go back into my consciousness level, to regress, if you will, to go down from step 7 to step 3, to try to wrap my mind around how the American people are thinking. And it's scary, really, because they are so mesmerized and myopic in their thinking. They're in denial.
Yes.
You know, a lot of them are. I mean, but you say, well, go back and read the Three Stooges and you understand how they got there. Well, I've read your article about that. But that still doesn't explain to me, why the majority of the American people can still continue to be buying this garbage.
Well, we'll talk about that when we come back from our break. How's that?
Oh, we're going to take a break. Okay.
We'll get into that, okay?
All right. Yeah, all right. I'll shut up.
You're listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and we'll be back with our special guest this evening, Mr. Michael Herzog. Don't go away. More to come.
A monthly 24-page newspaper in its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few remaining newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you? Subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues, the Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American.
Back in dead air again. I'm not hearing anything. Don, are you still with me? Seth, are you with me? Listening audience, are you with me? All right, well, I'll tell you what. Evidently, there's another technical glitch going on here again. So I'm going to step up to the plate and continue with this. Don was talking about reading his article, and I was talking about, if I read his article, The Three Stooges Go to Washington, I'd understand how John McCain got to where he was. Well, I think that I do understand how John McCain got to... Well, I don't think. I know how John McCain got to where he was, because that's who they wanted to begin with, folks. And this is the key. And this is why, you know, those of you out there that are listening to this broadcast with Don Nikoloff and Evident Footprints, you're listening to people that are telling you the truth, people that are trying to wake up the masses. But it's not just our job to do that. It's your job to do it as well, because you need to talk to your friends, neighbors, relatives, your doctor, your lawyer, your beautician, your pharmacist. And you don't have to go into a big diatribe like we do. The only thing you need to do is invite them, just like you invite a friend to church. Invite them to come and have a listen to BBS Radio. Invite them.
And I'm back again, Michael.
Oh, okay. I was just talking about... waking people up. I don't know how much of it you heard, but we were talking about, I was kind of carrying the ball while your technical glitch was going on, because I heard some dead air, and that's a big no-no.
Let's try finishing the sponsor ads here, and we'll be right back here. Hang in there.
All right.
You're doing great, though. Keep it up. I might hire you as a replacement.
There are many types of storable foods, but how about a superfood that contains every nutrient that the human body needs for survival? 50% protein, 300 milligrams of potassium per ounce, and calcium and magnesium for your heart and bones, with many more nutrients found in this incredible food source that the government does not want you to have. This product is available in powder, seeds, and oil, and is shipped free to your door in the U.S. This product is illegal to grow in the U.S., but is legal to import. Don't waste time thinking about storing food. Plan ahead and prepare for yourself and your family now, and be in control of your destiny. You can save and invest your money, but in the end, food will be your greatest asset. Remember what the Word of God says.
Well, my, we have dead air again. You know, folks, it's interesting that this happens, well, not on a regular basis, but it happens once in a while on my programs. It seems like every time I come on with a very controversial guest, somebody who's about ready to break some significant truth, something that is, you know, that the public really is crying or dying or needs to hear, there's a glitch. It always happens, well, this time it happened during a commercial, but it sounds to me like there's been glitches throughout this entire program. Don't know the reason why, but it's interesting that this happens because they are listening. They're listening to what Alternative Talk Radio says. They're taking the temperature. They want to know how many of you out there that are really awake. They want to know what is being said. There is something out there called controlled opposition. Have you ever seen these polls that they take, you know,
well, do you think that Barack Obama is dead? Or Sarah, do you think that Sarah Palin hurt John McCain's chances for presidency? You take
yes.
a vote, you're thinking, are you back?
Yes. Evidently, Skype is getting an abortion or something tonight. I don't know.
Well, okay, we just busted out on another one of your commercials.
Yes,
so,
it's all right. We'll leave it as B. And
folks, let me finish it up for you. It's Tom the Hemp Guy, okay? And he's got hemp powder, seeds, and oil, and he's got stuff for your pets that make your pets not want to eat any other pet's food besides the hemp pet food because it makes them healthy, happy, and it gives them a better coat on their fur, and it's just wonderful stuff. So give him a call. I don't know the telephone number, but Don can fill you in. Go ahead.
Actually, it's 1-908. 691-2608. So,
well, there you
that
go.
That said, we'll go on. I had a great song I was going to play for you, but it'll have to wait for another time. It looks like tonight it's just not going to work out.
Well, what do you mean? Just go ahead and wrap it off on your piano. I'm waiting. You've done
anyway,
it before.
Just go ahead. Well, anyway, now we're talking about what. The impact that the TV has on folks, and they got to hear me do a monologue on this this past Monday, and I do these once or twice a week, it seems like, anymore. You're witnessing brainwashing to the maximum here, and you know, a lot of people are going to take offense, but the listening audience well knows that that is what is going on. They talk to people who just don't seem to care. Everybody's waiting for a savior. Everybody's waiting for someone else to bail them out. And isn't it funny that they call this this banking scandal a bailout? Now they're already up to $2.2 trillion, by the way, in a matter of a week and a half. It's pure insanity what's going on. And I can tell you, by the way, Bernanke and Paulson were shaking in their boots during the hearings that took place before they finally blackmailed Congress into passing this legislation under threat of martial law. You could tell that they were shaking in their boots. Their lips were quivering, their voices were quivering, they were lying through their teeth. And I had actually even made some predictions, Michael, about the next bank that were going to go down. And I did predict that the Bank of New York Mellon would be the next bank to go down. And sure enough, 2 days later, They announced on the radio, not on the mainstream, but on the radio, that the federal government was buying them out for $3 billion. They were part of the Wantagate scandal, and now it's the Lehman Brothers, I think, are next.
No, Lehman Brothers already went down.
Or they went down. I don't know if anybody actually bought them yet, though. But, you know, that's a little formality that they have to work out. That's all that is. But Don,
don't you see that they buy them out before they go into bankruptcy? And this is because all of the top-level executives take out all of their property, exorbitant amounts of bonuses and so forth. But if they went into bankruptcy, they couldn't do that. Their stock goes from whatever it is, $50 a share down to $2 a share. But all of the high-level corporate CEOs draw all the money. They suck the life out of the company, and it never goes into bankruptcy, because if it went into bankruptcy, they'd have to pay it all back, don't you see? So
yeah.
Another higher-level company like J.P. Morgan will step in, buy it up for $2 a share, and all these high-level corporate executives can run off to their Caribbean islands with their yachts and enjoy the fruits of their labor or their scam.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Now, you remember the first amount of money that they presented for this bailout when it first went
originally
before Congress?
Originally $700 billion, yes.
Okay. The Dow Jones went down 514 points today, and mm-hmm. they equated that amount to be equivalent to $700 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you find that rather ironic?
Well, but this isn't the first time that it's had a 500-point drop, and not to mention that the Japanese stock exchange, the Nikkei stock exchange, went down, it's down, I think, 600 points today. But on this subject, what's ironic about this is I'm watching this. You know, Lindsay Williams made a prediction. He mentioned that he talked to a high-level oil executive that was a friend of his, and he said that oil is going to go down to $50 a barrel. They're going to find this miraculous oil find, I believe it was over in Russia. He made several other predictions. Gold was going to go down to $500 an ounce. And what I find fascinating right now is the Dow high last year was 14,000. It is now down to 8, which is about a 44% drop in a year. But what's interesting about this, that the exchanges, the Asian exchanges, the European exchanges, they're all going down, yet they are suppressing, they are driving down the cost of gold and silver. Now, what's fascinating about this, Don, is that gold right now is down to $725 an ounce, down from $1,030 an ounce just 3 months ago, okay? Yet, if you call a coin dealer, you can't buy any gold. Why do you think that is? Are you still with me, Don? Did I lose you? Are we still in the technical glitch here? Well, all right, we're in the technical glitch. We're going to have to get Don back here in a minute. In the meantime, let me tell you what I think it is, folks. It's interesting that they are driving the cost down of gold and silver to a point where it's the public at large is going, well, there's no sense in keeping this. This stuff is going through the floor. I need to sell this stuff off. Well, that's exactly what they want you to do. They want you to sell this stuff off because they're buying it up. Because if you call your local coin dealer and you try to buy gold, even on Kitco, go on Kitco and try to buy some gold. They've got a disclaimer right up there that says, you know what, you can place your order for gold, but it's going to be a delay. We don't know exactly when we're going to be able to, you know, place your order or fulfill your order. But in the meantime, you know, we'll take your order, and at some point in the future, we may deliver it. But even if we can't deliver it, we're still going to charge you a fee for taking your order. Now, from my estimation, what's happening here is that they are trying as hard as they can to drive down the cost of gold, and I know how they're doing that. I'll go into this in a minute here if Don doesn't get back online. But in the meantime, they're driving down the cost of gold as far as they can, and as well as silver, so that you, the American, the average American that has gold or silver in your store, I mean physical gold or silver, you know, the coins, the bullion or whatever, you're going to get so sick of it, you're going to say, oh my, this is a terrible investment, I'm going to sell it off. That's what they want you to do. They want
I'm
you to sell it off.
I'm sick of that.
What's that?
I'm sick of that, and I'm sick of my call dropping off.
Well, I was talking about driving down the prices of gold, why they're doing it,
And they're doing it because they want you to sell off the gold, thinking it's a bad investment, so they'll buy it up and there won't be any. Because if you go to buy gold or silver right now, you cannot buy it. And the way they're doing it is they're creating fictitious gold. Well, they're not fictitious. They're gold contracts. They're selling off gold contracts and using that to force the price of the gold down, even though it's not physical gold that they're selling. So go ahead, Don. Yes, you're back.
Yeah, you had asked me why that was going on, and I said, you said, where's the gold? And I said, they've stolen it.
Right.
Basically.
There isn't any. The gold is gone.
And I was hearing you talk, and you weren't hearing me. So there's definitely a funny problem happening tonight.
Well, Don, you agree with me that they are doing everything. The plunge protection team has stepped in here. They're driving down the cost of gold and silver as far as they can to make it, to increment in the American's mind that it's a terrible investment. Get rid of it. It's no good. It's going to continue to go down. You sell off the gold. The elite are buying it up, and you can't buy it right now. If you go in and try to place an order for gold, you can't get it.
Oh, I know. They're running commercials on TV, Cash for Gold, and where they're telling people to send in their old jewelry, and they'll send the money the next day. I'm sure you're going to get a real decent price on it, too. It's a game. They've made a lot of money, and now they want to drive the price down so that that people dump it, those that have it, and then, then they're going to drive it back up again. After they've basically cleaned it up, they'll put a little bit out there to make more money until they totally destroy the dollar. And it is really destroyed now anyway.
Well, what's interesting is that, COMEX is, delegating what the price is for gold. And the spot price of gold right now is $725 an ounce or thereabouts. I haven't looked in the last hour. But you go out on the market and you find out that you can't buy an ounce of gold for less than $1,000. So it doesn't make any difference at this point what COMEX says or what Kitco says. The value of the physical gold, because the way they're driving the price down of this gold is they're selling gold contracts, lease contracts, okay? And that's how they're forcing the price down. They're selling gold that doesn't exist.
Yes, I understand that.
It's like a fractional banking system. You know, you put a dollar in the bank, and the bank can lend out 10. Well, they're selling out these gold contracts on gold that doesn't exist, that they don't have, or, they've got a fraction of it in their possession, and that's how they're keeping the price suppressed. Anyway,
now, you've got to ask yourself, this is going on. This is obviously being orchestrated. And these people who are running all of this, and we're talking about the stock markets and the big corporations and the banks and the mortgage industry and everything that's associated with it, if they can blame that on us and our inability to pay, then it points out that the way you make it possible for us to pay for our homes and to pay for the products and services that we normally purchase, that you enable us to be able to make those purchases or those payments. And that requires work. That requires a job. That requires a means of earning a living, right?
Yes.
That to me seems like where the problem lies, and that they have intentionally disabled Americans from earning a living. And they're going to blame these things on the very people who don't have the income, when in reality this is all artificially created. I mean, the whole thing is an illusion. It's smoke and mirrors. It's a magic trick. And yet they, in their capacity to disempower the public, they've empowered themselves even more, and then required us to bail them out of the problem. Tell me that there's not something wrong with that scenario.
Well, of course there is. But, you look at the fiat system of currency to begin with. I mean, and this is what really boggles, or it doesn't boggle, it blows my mind, is that the public at large, and I'm talking about the average Joe Sixpack, hasn't got it yet. They still
don't get it. And the fiat currency is nothing more than a temperature gauge. It's a thermometer. They lend this money into existence. And when you're trading money, you know, you go to work 40 hours a week and get a paycheck. It's an FRN, Federal Reserve note. A note is a debt. It's an obligation. You're trading You're getting paid in somebody else's debt, and you're trading your labor for that debt, and you're turning around and paying a percentage of your labor back to the government or the Internal Revenue Service, which is a collection agency for the International Monetary Fund. Okay, so you're basically a slave. And what really blows my mind, Don, is that the public at large doesn't get it yet. I mean, the federal budget, I don't even know what it is this year, the George Bush's last budget, which he came on TV and he said, I think it's a good budget, which is total poppycock. You know, the budget was $2.5 trillion or something like that. It's about a trillion or $1.3 trillion that is coming from the American taxpayer, and that doesn't even go to pay the interest on the national debt, and hasn't since the Grace Commission report came out in the Reagan administration in 1984, and it said it didn't. And people still don't get it. I'm getting the feedback.
It all has to do with the fact that they've kept everybody's focus on the material world, which brings us back to metaphysics.
And Madonna lived in the material. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, you know, if you were talking before about people being inside the box, okay? And to get outside the box, you have to be willing to recognize the things that are illusory, and our financial system, really the whole world's financial system, is based on illusion. How is it that these people can be rich doing what they do, and we can be poor doing what we do? And I'm not saying that everyone listening to the show is poor, but I would venture to guess that most of the listeners of the show tonight have less money in their pocket or in their bank account or invested in the things that they own than the people that run these banks or the big corporations. And they'll explain it away as, well, you know, you chose the wrong profession, or you must be doing something wrong. No, it's a system designed to do exactly what it's doing. Now, it has to come to a point where people are going to wake up and say, wait a minute now. They're going to look at their lives, and they're going to say, did I come here to suffer? Did God give me a life so that I can be trampled for 70 years or 80 years, whatever the average lifespan is? Actually, now they're saying that the average lifespan is about 69.3 years. It's gone down roughly 3 years for women. Lord knows what it is for a man. And they have us so focused on the material aspect of physicality that there's no way that a person can think beyond that reality. All the attention is on the physical body. How it looks, how it feels, is it healthy or is it sick? And they're constantly doing things to make it sicker.
And don't forget to see your doctor and ask him if Paxil is right for you, you see. And the commercials are lambasted on there for everything from restless leg, and some of the side effects are just, well, we went there before. I'm not even going to go there.
We've talked about that ad nauseum.
But the bottom line, no, you're right. And it's all focused on the material world, and it's all focused on being thin and staying healthy and doing that by going down to the local grocery store and buying some of those wonderful processed meats with, you know, they spread the bacteria on there. I mean, you know, it's a farce, but I keep going back to square one, Don, is when are the American people at large going to wake up and see this illusion for what it is?
Well,
where are they gonna see it?
I think the answer to that's going to be when they finally realize that regardless of who the leader is, and whether it's the savior they think they're getting in Barack Obama, or the safety of having a former Vietnam POW that did 38 broadcasts for Radio Hanoi and married into a multi-billionaire family, Illuminati family, for that matter, they're, until that happens, until they realize that that those people are not going to bring them all this change that is promised. Both of them are actually using the word change in their campaigns now.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, let me bring this to your attention here. And this is what really scares me. You know, with all the outsourcing that has been done, they're doing everything they can do to balkanize, to, you know, to drag this country down to a third world nation. And the actual economy in this nation now is nothing more than a war economy. As a matter of fact, Barack Obama, part of his campaign is, you know, he wants to, they're not calling it a draft now, I don't remember what they're calling it, but they want to, indoctrinate our daughters now into this, okay? And the entire, you know, he wants to shift the focus off of Iraq and onto Afghanistan. I mean, it's a perpetual war. It's the perpetual building of bombs and defense contractors at the expense of our children's blood, at the expense of our senior citizens' health care, at the expense of our retiring, you know, baby boomers' 401k and 403b and IRAs. They are raping this country. And there's a an episode of Boston Legal where James Spader had made a speech. He was defending a woman that was I don't know, she was being tried for tax evasion or something like that. And he stood up and he made an eloquent speech as a lawyer, and he said, when 9/11 happened, at that time I thought, you know, the American people are finally going to stand up, you know. And then, you know, he went off on about six or seven different other things that, you know, happened, that George Bush, you know, imposed the Military Commissions Act or the Patriot Act. Or, finally, I thought the American people would stand up. The bailout bill, they still haven't stood up. I mean, when are they going to have enough? Do they have to have their savings account, their retirement funds drained? Do they have to be eating dog food and being kicked out on the street and holding a sign up by the freeway before they get it? That's been my concern. And I'll even add this, Don. When We the People Network closed down, you know, that was my last broadcasting venue, I decided to take, and you know this, I decided to take a step back and reflect on what I've been doing for the past couple of years and trying to wake people up and saying, am I doing any good? Am I getting through to people? Am I making a difference? And, you know, the jury's still out on that, because as much time, effort, and energy as people like you put into your research, your radio show, and doing the things that you do, you know, nothing, I mean, what can be short of just grabbing somebody by the collar and slapping him in the face and saying, wake up? You know,
yeah,
I've had
my moments in the last few weeks, and I've let my listening audience know that it would be just as easy for me, Michael, to have a radio show and to play music. You know how dear music is to me. It's my life.
Sure.
And you know, I have this cursed, if you want to call it that, sensitivity to see the truth and to see things that are going on that the average person doesn't see. And I had a lot of listening, of my listening audience call in or write to me expressing their appreciation for what I'm doing. So there's always somebody out there that's going to appreciate it. And God bless them for reminding me. And it's not out of despair or discouragement. It's what you're saying is very true.
Oh, Don, I've had an abundance of emails of people every day. I'm getting a slew of emails every day. When are you going back on the air? What time slot? We don't care where it is, blah, blah, blah. You know, we want to hear you. But I'm looking at this, and I'm looking at these people who have been, you know, they've been avid listeners of mine. But if the problem herein is, and again, I said this earlier in the program, we have an alternative network of people that listen to us. They're awake. But that's not enough. These people that are listening have to go out into the world and see their doctor, lawyer, their cosmetologist, their barber, whoever. And they have to invite them, just like they'd be inviting somebody to the church to come in and listen to programs like yours or mine, and wake them up, because we're all in this together. We're either going to hang together or we're going to hang separately. But we're going to hang if we don't wake enough people up and get to critical mass.
And that's what people like you are trying to do, and people like me are trying to do, but we're falling short of that. And it's because the listener is not doing enough to invite people in to experience the truth that you're giving. And it's, you know, if that would happen, if just one listener, each one of your listeners would go out and just invite one person, and they invited one, and then they invited one, it wouldn't take us 6 months, and we'd have this country back. We'd be running all these people out of office, Don. These people would be gone. That's a big part of our problem, is the people that are in office, that are incumbents, that are, you know, been in there for any length of time, they're bought off or they're compromised. They're sold out. They don't represent us. They represent international interests. They are kowtowing to the lobbyists, and they don't care what we think anymore because we are not paying attention. The dumbed-down mind-numb American, as long as he's got a beer in his hand and he's got a widescreen TV to watch Dancing with the Stars, he doesn't care what they do. That's the problem.
You know, Michael, Jesus talked about father turning against son and son turning against father. He talked about very dark days. And in many ways, those days are upon us right now. But they don't have to actually transpire that way. You know, I've done some shows recently on responsibility, on the responsibility of the individual. Even defining individuality as something that's indivisible, yet the way we interpret an individual, we interpret him or her as one person separate from everyone else, when in reality, it's the opposite. We're all one, and recognizing our individuality and our completeness, the way we were created, we immediately come to a place where we can create a solution. The problem with the media, especially the boop tube, we'll go back to television for a moment, every program outside of the news is some kind of fantasy, and they're calling it reality. When are they going to start calling the news reality? Because the news is as much spin. The difference now is that most people, because of limited perception and because of the amount of brainwashing that's gone on, when they see a news program, it seems to be something very formal. They're talking about world government. They're talking about war. They're talking about nuclear catastrophe. They're talking about disease. And this is being pumped into them subconsciously and consciously to the extent that they don't want to listen to the news because it's very depressing. Yet what they're hearing most of the time is spin. They're not hearing the truth. They're getting the same kind of programming that they're getting in all of these reality shows. They have a song contest called American Idol. Maybe one out of 20,000 or 50,000 people that try out for that show actually has any musical ability and can sing a song as an accomplished singer. Yet they treat it as if it's some kind of venture in learning how to sing. And they actually use those terms during the show. Well, by the end of by the end of this contest, you should be quite a remarkable singer. They're not there for training. This is a contest, is it not? And you have 65 million people voting for these people, none of whom could shine the shoes of anybody who's an established classic artist. And just think of your favorite singer, favorite blues singer, your favorite R&B singer, or your favorite pop singer, or your favorite classical singer. Those people trained their whole lives for that, and you got people climbing out of the woodwork, appearing, in all this glitz and this glamour and this hype, this mindlessness. And that is just dumbing down the people even more, that they're lowering the quality of the art form to the point to where my garbage man sings better than that. I can tell you that. The guy comes once a week and he's singing a song as he's dumping everybody's garbage in the back of the truck, and
he enjoys his work
better than anybody I heard on an American Idol.
Okay?
Okay.
So I don't know if that gets the point across. You know, these people are a dime a dozen, but it's what they force us to accept. You see, they force us to accept less than the worst. And that's exactly what we have in the political arena. None of these people have leadership qualities. You've got a guy who crashed 5 multi-million dollar airplanes, killed hundreds of people on board ships, went and did...
You've got an incumbent in office right now that has destroyed every business that he's ever ventured into.
Absolutely. And he's stealing trillions of dollars in the process.
And the people behind closed doors, the ones, you know, the top 300, the elite, you know, Bilderberg, call them what you will, they're behind the scenes laughing at us. Actually, they're laughing even harder at us, Don, you and I and people that are awake, because they right now believe that there's nothing we can do, and they know that we know, and they think it's funny because we can't wake up our fellow American citizens.
Well, I remember what Yogi Berra said, it ain't over till it's over.
Was that the commercial where he had the duck that walked out the door?
And he also said the opera ain't over till the fat lady sings, too. That
was that Yogi Berra that said that? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, he's come up with some very eloquent, interesting statements. But that being said, I agree with you. And this is why, Don, you know, I've taken some time off. I'm reflecting. I haven't done physical labor since I was, you know, in my late teens, very early 20s. And I did it to help a friend out, but I also did it for a bit of therapy to kind of reflect on who I am, what I want to do, and, you know, try to get into the mindset of what a person thinks when they're, you know, doing that kind of physical labor. And, you know, it's an experience. There's a lot to be said for it. Ultimately, I'll probably, because I've got that burning desire that you have, go back into broadcasting. But I have to tell you, you know, that it is a very frustrating venture to be doing what we're doing, and given the time, effort, energy, the passion, the desire that we have to do it, and still getting the lack of interest or the lack of numbers that I'd like to see of people that are saying, hey, yeah, that's right. Because if you step back and you look at the full picture, Don, like we have, all of this, these snippets, these little, you know, news clips, the sound bites, nothing makes sense respective of what they're talking about. Oh, it might make sense for a short term, but nothing makes any real sense in the big picture unless you are awake and you understand their agenda. Then it all makes sense. How many people do you see that are up and down Americans walking around all the time scratching their head, and you hear them talking in the coffee shops and so forth, and they sound like they know what they're talking about, but they're only just parroting what their favorite pundit has just said on the news the night before?
Yeah,
they
exactly.
Haven't got a clue what's going on.
Yeah, and they're usually admiring those that work for the CIA in the background, and you can tell who these people are by how much money they're paid and by... How frequently they avoid telling the truth?
Well, I would venture to guess that most of them are either being paid by the shadow government, or they are a part of the CIA. They are, you know, they're probably a CIA asset. I couldn't think of any other reason why they would be on national television lying through their teeth. They couldn't be that stupid and make that much money, Don.
Yeah, exactly. Michael, I never asked you this question. And I know your patriotism, and I know your love for the country and for the people. I know you have a big following when you're broadcasting, and I'm sure we have a lot of listeners tonight just because you're on the show. What is your supreme motivation for doing what you do in
revealing the truth to people the best you know how?
To see, I would like to know that when I leave this world, that my children and my grandchildren are going to continue in a country that I was raised to believe was a constitutional republic. That's my motivation. People say, well, what do you do this for? You know, is it your ego, blah, blah, blah? And I've said many, many times, and you know me very well, Don, it's not my, I don't do this for ego. I'm not looking, I don't have delusions of grandeur. I'm not looking to be a star, or I'm not looking to rub elbows with celebrities or whatever. I'm doing this because I have a concern for the future generations, inclusive of, but not limited to, my children and grandchildren. I have a severe concern for the elderly, the people that are retired, that are living on fixed incomes, that are, you know, having to make a decision even now as to whether they're going to buy groceries or pay their prescriptions or buy dog food instead. This is a terrible situation that we're in, and we can change this, but we have to wake up. We have to make sure that there's enough people awake to clean house and get these criminals out of positions of power and start over again and rebuild. We can do it. But it takes more than just us.
We put the cart before the horse, and it's taken them a couple hundred years to do it in the stages that they've done it. They've done it according to their schedule, their plans. But, you know, we have this we have a situation right now where our country is worthless. It's being sold out from under our feet to the ignorance of most people. Most people know something's wrong, but they have no idea where to begin looking. And you know, you did use the word now, because the word now is important. We must change it now. And the fact that these people are our servants, we're not their servants. As I recall the Constitution, the government serves the people. Of the people, for the people, by the people. And somehow that's gotten turned around, and most people don't even care about that.
No, because the people are too disconnected. You know, I heard a statement from a realtor not too long ago that... she made a statement that I had to laugh. She said, "We live in the richest country on the planet." Now, that statement is the most naive statement that any mind-numbed American could blurt out. Because if you realize how this system works, we live in a country that all of the currency that is in existence is borrowed into existence, and it's backed by nothing. It's fiat currency, it's a note, it's a debt. We are the brokest nation on the planet, and I say that by looking at the CIA's own records, from the wealthiest country in this on this planet to the most indebted country on this planet. The richest country on this planet is China. The brokest country on this planet is the United States of America. Yet people still believe, through the propaganda, that we are the richest country. This has to be changed. People have to learn the truth, and not only learn it, but they have to accept it and quit living in denial. It's only then that we will have the ability to do something about it.
Yes. You brought up a point regarding Lindsay Williams earlier when I got knocked off the air one of the two or three times tonight. And you brought up the issue of them discovering oil in a foreign country. Well, you know, we have the Prudhoe Bay field in northern Alaska. We have also the Green River find, which is 2 trillion barrels of oil. It's shale oil, and it may require a different extraction method, but it's 4 times the oil in Saudi Arabia, right there in Colorado. There is a more recent find now, and this is within the last month, I understand, in Montana, the Bakken field, B-A-K-K-E-N, there are 550 billion barrels of oil in that find. That's That's a lot of oil. That would put us somewhere between 8 and 16 times the amount of oil that is in Saudi Arabia alone. And I think you can add up all the other countries that are oil-producing countries, and we're still 4 times ahead of that. So we're being lied to left and right. This is quite obvious that this is going on, that this information is getting out, and yet, we're painted these gloomy pictures, and I'm not even supporting oil as a fuel. Look at what it's done. Oil has become the economy of the world, and it's running neck and neck with pharmaceuticals as well. It's awakening to things like this that are going to eventually cause people to look at other aspects of existence. And I think when the food stops, when the stores run out of food on the shelves in a matter of hours, when there's a panic to get food because the prices are going so high, and the word gets out that something's not going to be available. You know how people are. They panic instantly. They'll pay attention to the fear-mongering through the mainstream media. And then those people that have not prepared are going to be asking everybody else for help. Again, it's going to be a further demonstration of people waiting for someone else to save their rear end at the last minute. And unfortunately, for many, that's going to be too late. And I've let my listening audience know that I will not take responsibility. I'm not going to feel responsible for those that I have not been able to awaken. And I don't have any illusions of grandeur in my status as a radio talk show host or a journalist. But the truth coming out, there are people reading what I'm writing, and there are people listening to this show and other shows that I'm on, that know that I have been revealing a lot of things that the mainstream is not revealing, as you do and many others that we know. And we're at a point now where we're depending on the listening audience helping us get the message out. It's one thing to listen to the show, as you said. It's another to go out and tell some people, turn on this show, do some reading, find something out. You've got to know other people that are experiencing the kinds of problems that we're talking about. Isn't anyone willing to help anyone else? Are we that pathetic of a society that we don't care about our brothers and sisters, at least in our own country?
No, that's the key. That's definitely the key, Don. I mean, it's time. You know, the only way that this is going to work is if the listening audience takes the bull by the horns and starts inviting their friends, neighbors, and relatives, and working associates, and so forth, to come in and have a listen. Even if you have to say, hey, you know what, I heard this show on the radio, I really value your opinion as an intelligent human being. Have a listen. Tell me what you think. You know, tactfully bring these people in and allow them to listen. They're your fellow Americans, folks. These people need to know what's going on, and they're getting spoon-fed a bunch of garbage through the boob tube. And as long as that happens, they're going to continue to be hypnotized, and they're going to be led like sheep to the slaughter. And when I say that, I want to emphasize being led like sheep to the slaughter. You know, all of these executive orders that have been, invoked by George Bush, the prison camps, the Halliburton contracts, and so forth, this stuff is for real, Don. And people like us, the people that are in the forefront, we're the first ones that are going to go. So this is do or die for us. We have to get the message out to these people, make critical mass, and drive these criminals out of office, because we don't have much time left. Matter of fact, I will predict that this election that is coming up, if it happens, will be the last election in this country, because I believe that there's enough executive orders and legislation that has been invoked that this will now be a total dictatorship. One more false flag event, Don, and I know you agree with me, okay, whether it's a pandemic, bird flu, whether it's another false flag 9/11 event, it's over. We'll be in a dictatorship. And all of those that are dissidents, like you and I, are going to be marched off to the camps. End of story.
Yeah,
they're going to try to march us off anyway.
Well, okay. You're on the same page as I am there, but what I'm emphasizing to the listening audience is that, you know, it's 2 seconds, it's not even, it's a half a second to midnight. You know, it's time to get up off of your seat, not use the information to make, you know, a hit at a cocktail party, but start bringing your fellow Americans to the truth. That's all I have to say about that.
Yes. Well, it is actually one half second past midnight right now. We got to call it a night, Michael, but it's been great. And I want to thank you for co-hosting for me as our wonderful technology has interrupted the show more times than any other show I've done since I've been broadcasting. So,
well, not a problem.
You've been through it before, and you're a pro at it. So I thank you for filling in for me.
Not a problem. And when I'm up and broadcasting again, of course, you'll be one of my first guests on my program.
Well, I wish you luck there too. I know there may be a spot opening for you in the very near future, if I can make that prediction. And I know you'll be back on the air and receiving emails and calls from your many and loyal listeners. And I look forward to having you on my show again. This has been fun tonight, and it's also been very important, the message that you brought forth. So I want to thank you. And next time you're going to have to bring your guitar. We're going to go off the deep end.
All right.
And have a little jam session.
All right. Well, I'll take you up on that. All right.
Okay.
All right, well, have a good night, and good night to your listening audience as well. All right.
Yes. Bye. All right. Thank you, Michael.
All right,
you have been listening to Evident Footprints, Interruptions and All, and our special guest, Michael Herzog. Visit his website at theamericanawakening.org, and Michael will be on again, hopefully soon. In the meantime, I apologize for all the technical glitches. I don't own the phone company. I only rent it, as you do, and special thanks to Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and Seth Hendrick for the sound and the multiple connections tonight. With that, I wish everyone in the listening audience a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.